Mavis Beacon did nothing for me.
What? Say that again. I don't know.
Mavis Beacon?
What's that?
Really? Neither of you guys?
No. What are you talking
Oh
about?
man, dude, back when I was a little tyke in school, that was a program they used to try to teach you how to type without looking at the keyboard. It's like just like this like black woman, and she teaches you how to type without looking at the keyboard, and I was really bad at it.
Mavis Beacon.
Yeah. She's
I've
a
never.
babe.
Aloha, ladies and gentlemen, to the Game Plan Podcast, episode 18 from gamers-association.com, coming to you live straight from the great internets in the US of A. I am your host, Luke Frazier, here with the great crew, Logan Hollinger.
Why did that sound like American Top 40? Are we American Top 40 now?
maybe we're getting more famous, so we have to abide by their standards. I don't know. I'm a little weird today. Nick Cain is here too.
Hey guys.
Hey guys. How are we today? Are we good today? This morning? This Saturday morning?
It's bubbly and bright. It's lovely.
It is.
Puttering along, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Puttering along. You guys been playing anything fun? We missed last week, so you've had 2 weeks to build up a little playtime.
Yeah. I did Fez.
You did.
Which
you did,
took me
Fez.
about a week of leisurely play.
So that is something that you do, not something that you play. Like Fez is a lifestyle.
Yeah,
second
man.
Half of Fez is thing you do.
Yeah, Fez is a thing you do, man. Like you just do the Fez.
Sounds like something Phil Fish would say.
Yeah. Yes. And I am still stuck in a terrible, inescapable Dota hole.
Ah, the Dota. Oh man, Brad Shoemaker.
The K hole, but worse. it's the Dota hole. It's terrible.
I was listening to I think I told you about this, like this week's giant bomb cast, and Brad Shoemaker is in a scary Dota hole.
It is a terrible game that should be purged from the internet because it is more addicting than anything.
Dude, I was listening, and like the way he talked about it just sounded like an addict that was about to die. Like
yeah.
He said he just like sat down, he's like, yeah, I'll play like a match or two. He sat there for like 10 hours.
So yeah,
like,
the coincidence being that I frequently am about to die when I'm playing Dota. That makes perfect sense.
That reminds me of a video by one of my favorite sketch comedy troupes, Loading Ready Run. They're from Canada, and that's not really relevant. I should feel I should mention they're Canadian. I don't know. Anyway, this was like 10 years ago, but these two guys, they were roommates, and they were obsessed with Dota. Like so much so that this was a sketch. So much so that the other guys could come in and just steal all their stuff and leave nothing but their chair and their computer, and they would not notice.
Yeah, it's all. I have imposed self-imposed limitations on how much I'll play that game now.
What are the limits?
Well, I will play 2 days between Monday, 2 nights between Monday and Friday.
Wow, no. That's really specific.
Dude, it's bad. Because, like, I stay up way too late with my friends, and, like, not that it matters. I'm just a zombie at work, and...
That's
Dota!
It's bad. It's bad.
So why...
Wait, is Dota a name or an acronym?
An acronym. Defense of the Ancients.
But of and the are never part of an acronym.
Only when it makes it sound better.
Da! It would be without that.
It's like, SWOTOR? Yep.
Ugh. Not a fan of acronyms at all.
Ever?
Nah, for the most part.
Okay. All right.
Well, now, acronyms.
Pronouncing them.
Acronyms are only the pronounceable ones, like.
Oh.
Like Dota. Dota is an acronym. However, ATM is an initialism because you can't say it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
How about those people that say ATM machine? They're the worst, huh?
Yeah.
This is gonna be very inappropriate. My friend calls them ass-to-mouth machines.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I wonder how long it takes to split someone's throat with a magic card.
This is getting dark real fast.
That was just that went bad quick.
Sort of reminds me of Anchorman. Well, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, it did. Huh. But yeah, Dota hole, K-hole, bad, terrible.
Okay.
Stuck. Can't get out.
All right, so So things we could say on this podcast. One, if you want to play Dota, Nick will give you one. But Nick does not advise playing Dota because it's terrible. So
we should like put a Surgeon General's warning. Do not play Dota while pregnant.
The thing is, the first time I played it, I didn't like it. I liked League of Legends better. And then it's just one of those things, like, the first time you hate it, but the second time, you can't get enough of it. It is a perfect drug analogy, that game.
I feel like that way for some movies. Like, the first time I saw Big Lebowski, I was like, this is not a big deal. Now I freaking love it.
It was excellent.
Yeah. Better with age. Is that pretty much been taking up your time, then?
That's time
with Fez and Dota?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not a lot of... Dude, April had no games.
No, I know. Like, it seems like Bioshock Infinite kind of came out kind of downward spiral since then. This week's release was like nothing. Nothing came to stores.
So maybe that's exacerbating the issue that I'm just playing a ton of Dota, but
Last Light comes out next week.
Yeah, that looks good. I like all the Metro games. They're not great, but they're really well and lovingly made. Their worlds are good.
What's interesting is that all of the reviewers I follow on Twitter who are reviewing it is like they're like, guys, Metro Last Light. I can't say anything yet, but I'm really excited.
I love it when they do that. You can just tell they want to break those embargoes so hard.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for some favorable reviews, and if we get a copy, I'd like to jump on that review, but we'll see.
That would be awesome.
Cool. So, Logan, what have you been playing since Metro's not out yet?
Fallout 3. Lots and lots of Fallout 3.
Really? Went back to Fallout?
I always go back to Fallout, dude.
Oh, well, like, you've been going back to Sonic so much.
No matter how much I play games, like, every once in a while, I just want to play Fallout 3 again.
And has it been scratching the itch? Has it been making you happy still?
Yes, until it catastrophically failed for no clear reason.
Game is a little glitchy every once in a while.
Not that. It's also because I mod the hell out of it.
Okay. How are you modding it?
It's a bunch of subtle stuff like quest mods and retextures to make things look better and, you know, stuff like that. But here's the thing. Like, it comes with games for Windows Live. The fact that was your initial reaction just completely removes the need for my next sentence. But I'm going to say it anyway. Nobody likes games for Windows Live.
Right.
So even though I don't run any mods that need it, I'm still using a script extender, which for those of you who don't mod, a script extender is basically something that adds additional operations to a game's engine, so to speak, so you can do more complex things with like menus and weapons and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I do that. I use that exclusively because it disables games for Windows Live.
Oh, nice. Good. I didn't know you could do that.
Good. Yeah, like it's like an anti-cheat feature, and it's incompatible with a script extender, so the EXE that launches the script extender just completely disables it. And I'm like, fine, you know, that's worth the download. But see, the thing is that I like completely uninstalled all of my mods and all the DLCs. So I am operating on exclusively vanilla Fallout 3 here.
Whoa.
And it still crashed for no reason. So it wasn't any of my mods. I wasn't having like a missing master file or any sort of dodgy installation. It was the game somehow. So on a lark, I reinstall. That doesn't work. So I turn off the script extender and that works. Except three things happen. One, I have to uninstall half my mods because I can't use the script extender anymore. Two, it turns games for Windows Live back on. And three, it resets all of my saves.
Ooh.
So you're probably not going to be playing Fallout 3.
No, here's the thing. I still play it. I had to start over, but I'm still playing it. I love that game so much.
Not dedication. Very good.
It's like I can sort of like reset my character's level with a few console commands. Like I have not cared about Steam achievements ever, so yeah, I don't mind cheating. For those reasons. Like I don't like to break the game, of course, but like I just basically like brought myself back up to my original level, and you can monkey with the quests so that you had the same ones completed as before, and you get those rewards. But that's really complicated, and I'm kind of scared to do that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to avoid those quests for now and do other things.
Cool. You love but that think, Bethesda stuff.
Mostly Fallout. Like, I liked Skyrim. I really did. But it just didn't have the same kind of punch that Fallout does for me.
Do you like Wolfenstein?
I want to check out the big keg of Skyrim when that comes out and see how much better it is than vanilla.
Just to answer your question, Luke, I played Return to Castle Wolfenstein a long time ago. Mm. It was one of my first PC games. And I never finished it because it was so hard.
You didn't play the reboot of a few years ago?
No.
You're probably not crazy excited about the newly announced Wolfenstein.
I mean, I'm like, it's like, okay. I mean, I like Bethesda. They make good stuff. So, like, I mean, like, Arkane Studios never made anything before Dishonored, but under Bethesda's wing, so to speak, they made a really kick-ass game in Dishonored. So I'm feeling like Machine Games might do the same thing with Wolfenstein.
That'd be nice.
So we'll see.
Bethesda also publishes stinkers every now and then. They never make them, but some of their publishing decisions are
like
bad.
You guys remember Brink?
Brink and it was like a female gun game.
They did. Was it Wet? Did they? They didn't
yes,
do Wet.
Yes.
Did they do Wet? Really?
Published
was
it.
Was that Bethesda or was that ZeniMax?
Oh, you might be right about that. Okay.
Because ZeniMax owns Bethesda, but they also have their own publishing wing.
Okay.
Choosing.
Okay, that's good then. Because, Bethesda's one of those companies, I think, like, if Bethesda makes a game or really gets behind the game, it's probably going to be good.
So I'm hoping that's what they do with Wolfenstein, is my point.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Wet totally was Bethesda. Bethesda proper publishing.
Oh, wow.
Terrible.
Did you play it?
Yes.
Wow. And it was bad?
It played on, like, commercials.
Which they ripped off from Fallout.
I can't be faulted for playing bad games before I cared to follow the industry.
Now, even when you're in it, like, it's good to play a bad game every once in a while just to, like, get an appreciation for the good stuff.
Yeah, because reviews are just going to continually climb otherwise.
Yeah. Huh. So other than Fallout Man, has that been taking most of your time for these last...
I had a curious experience the other day. I thought, you know what? Since I'm having so much fun with Dishonored, I'll pick up Mark of the Ninja again and see how that goes. Mm. And I'm like... I was looking at the progress bar on Steam. It's like, downloading. Like, 45 minutes left. It's like, I really don't want to play this game. This game seems like no fun to me right now.
Yeah, there's...
It took me till halfway through downloading it before that came to me. It's like, I really don't want to play Mark of the Ninja. Like, what's up with that?
What is up with that? Did you find an answer? What was up with that?
No, it was like, looking back, like, Mark of the Ninja was a good game. It just wasn't spectacular. Hmm. It's like, it's not something I would play more than once.
And oddly enough, it's one of those games that I could never get into a groove with. Like, I couldn't, like, if I would play for 2 hours and just be like, nope, that's enough. I'm going to turn this off now.
And mm-hmm. It's like, another thing I had a problem with, like, in Dishonored, like, if you get caught, you can still, like, you can still do stuff, you know? Like, okay, I can kill this guy and then run off and jump into the water. They can't find me there. But in Mark of the Ninja, you pretty much have to reload a save, which just kills the flow.
Yeah, totally. That's absolutely correct.
So yeah. Checkpoint Charlie. It's like, there was no manual save or quick save or anything like that. You had to use checkpoints. And so it was like... After I still had the taste of Dishonored in my mouth, if you will, Mark of the Ninja just doesn't seem as good as it was when I was first playing it, because I played it before I played Dishonored.
Ah. Yeah, I own Mark of the Ninja. I've just never given it a go.
It's worth
a shot, but like I wouldn't buy it at the full $15 Steam price.
Huh, that's interesting for you guys to hear, because I when I was listening to a lot of the Game of the Year talks from last year, a lot of people had that really high on their lists, Mark of the Ninja.
Well, you know, it's like...
I'm sorry.
It's nowhere near a bad game.
Right.
But, yeah.
No, I agree with Logan on that. Like, it's a good game, but I never got into it as I read everyone else did.
Yeah, me either. Like, Luke, you already have it. It's not graphically intensive. Try it.
Yeah. I will. After I finally break through this semester, I will definitely go back.
I actually felt the game had really good controls, however, which is that's a good compliment.
It wasn't bad, I guess. Yeah. I mean, but like for our like three listeners out there, if you don't have Mark of the Ninja yet, like I bought it in a pack of indie games for $1 American. So I got a pretty good deal. Like, wait for a sale for it if you really want to play it. Because, like, it's already $15, so on a Steam sale, it's going to be super cheap. Right. So just, like, it's not really a full-price game to me.
Yeah. Steam's going to be having its summer sale in, like, a month and a half anyway. It'll be wicked
Thank
cheap.
Like, see, that actually sort of segues into what I want to talk about today, but we've got other stuff to do. So.
Yeah. Sweet. All right. Well, I can talk about stuff real quick, because I've been in just not a Dota hole, but just, like, a terrible college hole and not playing as many games as I want to. Yeah.
Terrible College Hole is my Weezer cover band.
Yeah. What have I played? I did end up buying Battlefront, and I played it for just a little bit.
And oh, really?
We talked about that a few podcasts ago, how we wanted to get to Battlefront, and I'm like, I gotta check this out.
And it was like $3?
Yeah, so...
I'm two.
You bought it?
Yeah, you told me to, so I bought it.
Nice! Yeah, so last week was like May the 4th, so... May the 4th be with you times. And so Steam was like, sweet, Star Wars sale. And so I picked up that and what else? Starfighter, I think. And, but yeah, it was wicked cheap. And I'm like, I just have to see online. And I ended up getting into just like this battle arena pretty much in this like city. And everybody, it was like Jedi's only. And it was madness. But I think it was so chaotic that nobody could really be good at the game, so there wasn't really, like, a big learning curve. And it's real simple, so I just went in as Darth Maul, because Darth Maul's my homeboy. And it's like, all you have is, like, you got you and your lightsaber, and you have two abilities, either to throw your lightsaber or to force push. And so all it is, like, you stalk through these cities, and then you find a Jedi, and you, like, jump over a fence, because you can jump wicked high. And then you force push them so they can't move, and then you just tackle them and just slash them to death. And it was so much fun.
That like, all sounds
there's silly. There's 30 Jedis just running around the city slashing each other.
Yeah, that was always my favorite game mode.
It was so fun. And I'd never played Battlefront 2 before, so I'd never played with Jedis. And it was... I still think that game is super fun.
Dude,
by the way, I'm going to push up my glasses and be my Star Wars nerd here. The plural of Jedi is still Jedi.
Did I say Jedis?
You said Jedi's.
Bummer. All right. But yeah, it's a bunch of fun. So.
But here's the thing about May the 4th that I found pretty hilarious and also kind of sad. The Monday after the 6th, it was announced that EA got the exclusive rights to make Star Wars games. And I was like, oh my god, it's Revenge of the 6th.
Oh, that's good timing.
I forgot. Can I interject?
Yeah.
I played Xenoclash 2.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I think you talked about that a little bit on the last podcast.
Yeah, I did. I did. Like I said, I reviewed it. I think for its price, you should definitely check it out if it's your thing. It's, what, $20? It's not bad. It's not great, but again, for $20, it's well worth checking out.
And if you want something different, it seems
because there's no games really like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but besides...
That's it. Just totally forgot. Want to definitely give a shout-out to the Atlas and Ace Team people. So there you go.
Yeah. Atlas, aren't they changing? Are they changing? No, it's XSEED that's changing their name. Never mind. Anyway, so other than that, I haven't really played much. I was going to... I actually went into City of Steam to play today, because City of Steam decided they were going to have an open beta this weekend. And it's like a Unity browser-based MMO. And I got like... half hour into, my dad was like, hey, you should come with me to do this stuff. So I did. But yeah, so I probably will spend some time checking out City of Steam today.
So what was the half hour like? Did you...
The half hour was, I didn't really get much done. But I like, just like, kind of the concept, like, the just that it's a browser-based MMO, like, a fully-fledged one, that you don't have to download anything. You just kind of can pop it up and play it. So,
is this microtransaction-y?
I don't know. I didn't get deep enough into it. I don't even know if they have any microtransaction-y stuff in there. But it's almost like a balance between like a dungeon crawler and like an actual like WoW clone kind of thing. Because you can control it with just mouse clicks if you want. I think when I originally played it last summer, it was only mouse clicks, but they ended up adding WASD. And then you can fix the camera if you want to like an isometric view or not. Cool. Yeah, and it's very like action clicky, like combat. Like it's not just like WoW where you like click somebody and then you auto attack. So I don't know, it's kind of cool. So and that's open beta right now. So if anybody feels like playing it, go play it. But that's all I've been doing because I've been, this is my last week of college classes that I'll ever have. And then I got finals next week. So I've been kind of super busy. So hopefully everything will change afterward. I was going to pre-order that great Kingdom Hearts. But because that finally got a release date of September 10th. But then I realized I don't know where I'll be living September 10th. So I probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's the thing. And, you know, you might want to wait till you get pre-order bonuses up because they definitely will.
Till I get what?
Pre-order bonuses up.
Well, yeah, they just announced that everybody is going to have the pre-order bonus of, like, this art book. So I was like, I love an art book. Let's do it. So I don't, but again, I don't really want to, like, ship it to my parents' house because that'll, like, be, like, a 10-day delay or something.
Ugh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. All right, well, we can roll right into some specific topics if you guys want to do that. Logan, you were saying that you had something you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I have never liked the 5-star review system.
Okay.
Because I don't really believe you can put a numerical value on a subjective opinion.
Okay.
I'm with you.
So I've sort of kind of thought up a new scale. That's probably basically the same, only it doesn't use numbers, it uses labels.
Okay.
So, like, a 0 is do not buy this game. Under no circumstances should you go anywhere near this game.
Okay.
1 is, like, play the demo first, then you're probably not going to want to buy it either. 2 is rent it, like, you know, like Redbox or Gamefly or whatever. 3 is wait for a sale. 4 is, well, it's only a 4 scale, I suppose. And 4 is full $60 release date price. Well, I guess maybe 5 is pre-order, but that probably wouldn't happen.
Huh.
Yeah, no, I've always been of the opinion that numbers are silly. But that being said, we are, as an industry, helplessly lassoed to them.
Yeah, and publishers really like it when you give their game scores.
Yeah, no, because I agree wholeheartedly that I think it's stupid and silly and pointless, and it detracts from our writing. Like, because, like, let's just say IGN has the rights to post their review 6 hours earlier than everyone else. Half the times, I'll just look at their number, because, to be honest, I'm not going to read an IGN review. Like, I feel bad for the reviewer because he is clearly a normal person who loves video games like me, and I'm just not gonna read it. Just, you know, but I want to see your number.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, IGN gets a ton of hate. Like just in the game club that I was a part of at my college, a lot of people hate IGN there. Just hate them.
I love IGN. I'm not gonna lie. I love IGN, but not for their editorial as much as their very wide stretching coverage of the industry.
And that's the thing, and I almost feel bad for their editorial team, because, like, just from listening to podcasts and meeting them at, like, PAX and stuff, they're a bunch of nice dudes.
No,
and, like,
of course they are. Like, they're not evil spinsters with cotton looms up in the attic or anything.
Yeah, like, they're not in control of, like, when they get an exclusive review or something. Like, if a reviewer is doing a review that's, like, exclusive, it's not his fault that, you know, that anybody else thinks it's unfair. It's not like he was, like, adamantly out there saying, like, I really want this exclusive review. Like, that was all marketing and stuff, so.
Back to Logan's point about actual numbers on reviews, that's also why I very much dislike Metacritic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about Metacritic. It's like, I find that putting numbers on reviews also leads to a few less than positive habits. Like, I'm intellectually familiar with Metacritic and the issues surrounding it. Mm-hmm. But when I look at a game store page on Steam, I scroll down to look at the Metacritic number first.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Like, it's, yeah, I agree. Continue, sorry.
It's like, I don't even look at reviews sometimes. I was like, okay, this one's got like an 85, so it's probably pretty good. Or I was like, oh, this one has a 52? Ugh, I'm not buying that game. It's like, I can't form my own opinion because Metacritic has already told me my opinion.
But answer me this, Logan. Do you see a number, like, in between 70 and 95 and think, yeah, this game's like a bad boy. Because I kind of feel like that sometimes, that like it might be one of those games that has a really great kernel, but has some stumbling blocks. Because I feel the weirdest games get like sevens. And I like the seven.
Well, it's like the only games that ever get like 89 to 100, well, no one ever gets 100, but 89 to like 99 are the games that you know already that everybody loves.
Yeah, correct.
And COD Blobs 2. And
yeah, I mean, that's got, I think, a 200, if I'm correct.
Uh-huh.
A 200 on Metacritic.
So, like, the real gray area lies in, like, the 70 to 80 range. Because below that, it's like, okay, everybody agrees that it's pretty bad, and a few guys liked it for some reason.
Oh, God. Getting so bad.
And so, like, it's really confusing because I don't like it that Metacritic tells me my opinion, because you don't know me, Metacritic. You don't know my struggle.
Yeah. And what makes me worse, and like, it's, we are grading games on a school grading scale, on a, you know, anything below a 70 is a failure, but that's not how it should work at all, because why don't we just have a 30-point scale? Because if a game is, I've never seen a game in between 30 and 70. Like, you either get a 10 through 20 or a 70 through 100.
I've seen a few indie games on Steam get like a 52.
Ugh. Like, what's that? That's ridiculous. I hate that so much.
And here's the thing. It's like, oh, crap, I forgot what it was. Oh, right. Let's take a look back at my most recent review, the Knife of Dunwall DLC. I did not know what score to give it because my feelings about it were so ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to give it a score because it was a review. So it was like, like 3 out of 5. I don't know. It was like, I don't feel it really reflected my opinion, which was just complete and utter disappointment. And yep. So, like, it's really hard to, like, I can't, like, make a pros and cons list of that DLC because, like, well, there's so little of it. Like, I was very disappointed. Like, I can make a pros and cons list and, like, do some really weird pseudo-math sometimes. But not with that one. It's, like, it's games like that and, like, just basically all-around subjective opinions and general feelings about a game.
Yep.
That make it really hard to assign a number to. So I feel like sometimes a number might not necessarily reflect the quality of a game, because you can't really gauge all of the different emotions that go in between those numbers. Like, do you guys ever hear about Dark Void?
Yeah. Nope.
The Jetpack game?
I only made an 8-bit, like, tie-in with it.
Yeah, I think the 8-bit one was better.
And it's like, reviewers had very conflicting opinions about it. I think Yahtzee Croshaw said it best. It was down, up, then down again. Like an Alzheimer's patient on a stair lift, but anyway, that's what he said. And so, like, that, I feel, really accurately describes the general feeling of that game without having to assign a number to it.
Mm-hmm.
But see, Yahtzee is obviously a black sheep. I mean, his reviews are chiefly for entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I feel that we can sort of apply his mentality. We just need to sort of, I hate using this word because it's a buzzword and I hate buzzwords almost more than anything else. We need to sort of evolve beyond the need for numbers.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's really confusing because games are, like, obviously there's never been anything like a video game before. And we have to treat it by standards that don't necessarily fit it. It's like we're wearing shoes that are like two sizes too big.
I am very different than you two on this whole review score thing. I used to be of the mind, like of the similar mind, where I'm like, I hate review scores. Like it takes away, like people just don't read the review then, because if there's a score, they just go down to there. They get their opinion just from that. But I don't know, as I've gone on, like scores just work for me. When I see a game, and it's like, if a game like Metacritic is my homepage for a reason, and a lot of people think that's like blasphemy, but if there's like a game or a movie or whatever, and it gets like, I don't know, above an 80, then I definitely need to check it out. And And it usually works for me. And I can still form my own opinion, like, wow, this game's probably really good, but it's not something I'm going to like. I already know that. Or, like, if a game or something gets below, like, I think usually, like, 60 is, like, my threshold. Like, once it gets, like, into the 50s and lower, I pretty much know that this is, like, too broken, too, like, mm-hmm. the mechanics are off, that I'm just not going to like it. And it's all this stuff is, like, held up when I've tried out games. And so, like, just with my experiences with it, it provides an easy way for me to look at something. And I feel, and even now, like, even when I rarely read every single word in a review when it's posted. Like, no matter who the reviewer is, I end up, like, starting to skim, even, and, like, going down to it. And I feel like with so many reviews out there and so many voices, it really helps to bring everything together. I rarely play a game where there's, like, a huge disparity between how I feel about the game and what the Metacritic rating ends up being.
See, like with me in Black Ops 2. It's like, it has a 92.
Okay, that is ridiculous. And I like that game. Actually, I can't even really say that. I played 20 minutes of the campaign and turned it off because it was crap. I like the multiplayer of that game, and that is ridiculous that it's that high.
But I think that's a game that...
We can argue about Metacritic's merits all day. Let's take a moment to argue the merits of your homepage, Luke. I mean, really? Okay. Like, the homepage serves as the nexus of your internet access. Yep. So it should be something not Metacritic.
I'll tell you the reason why I have Metacritic. I used to work at an FYE record store or whatever that sold video games, movies, and CDs. When I worked there, I always knew what was coming out in the world of entertainment. Always, because I was always on top of, like, what movies were coming out, what games were coming out, what CDs were coming out, all that kind of stuff. Because I cared about all this stuff. When I stopped working there, I was away from that area, and I wanted a way to know what was still coming out in the world of entertainment, and what people were loving and what people weren't. And that was an easy way to do it. You open Metacritic. Metacritic opens really fast. It scrolls between, you know, movies, then CDs, and then TV shows and stuff. I always know what's at the forefront of people's minds in the entertainment world and what people are loving.
Here's my, I guess, spiel. As games are evolving, it becomes increasingly more difficult to assign a number because games are evolving. Well, some games, obviously, can't make a complete blanket statement. Some games are evolving into almost strictly storytelling, which means some people hate Moby Dick. Like, it's, you know, and some people love it. And the reason is because it's a story. You can't really judge. You can judge a game on its technical prowess and its, you know, whether it's broken or not. But when so much of some games are relegated to the emotive response or the storytelling, that's when you're in a complete gray area where everything is subjective. And to toot our own horn, that is why we tried so hard to set up our review structure as it is. We still use the 5-star, but we try to, under any guidelines we wish, describe what the game does well and what the game does not well. And as long as that's there, I'm okay with a number, because, like I said, we, as an industry, are just hogtied to giving things numbers. They say that Metacritic score influences paychecks to developers. That's terrible, but it's one of those things that it's very difficult to tell what a game is, because they are stretching out like an octopus, putting its tentacles in every direction right now, you know? Like, everything is growing at once, and it's really difficult to put a number on that, because some of those things are completely subjective.
Right, but I think as a critic, like a game critic or any kind of critic, really, you have the ability to, like, separate your own subjective opinions from...
No, absolutely. Like, I said before, and I said it during about Fez, I both like bad games and can dislike good games.
Right.
Here's the thing, like, I'm going to quibble about nomenclature because I like to quibble about nomenclature. Critic and reviewer, it's like, critic, like, critique is something you do to art.
Okay, yeah.
And review is something you do to a product.
Yeah, that's totally true, and that's, That's a very interesting argument about, like, what are we, you know? Like, how are we supposed to tread that? Because I don't want someone to spend $60 hating something because I said I liked it. Like, that would feel like crap.
Yeah, I agree with what you said earlier. Like, I don't have a problem with numbers because, or I don't see the problem with numbers because if the review is there, the words are there for the people that want them. And so adding a review score for the people that just want a review score helps. And so it's kind of like helping everybody. And then I don't blame Metacritic like a lot of people do for the way it's used. Like a lot of people, like you said, I think New Vegas is one of the most like infamous ones where those developers didn't hit like – they were like 2 points away or something from their 85 that they needed. And so they didn't get a bunch of bonuses.
Ugh.
And that – I don't blame Metacritic for that. Metacritic is just providing something. What people end up doing with Metacritic is not Metacritic's fault.
No, that – you're right. That's fair.
As many people as Metacritic and a numbered score might help, you could argue that they hurt just as many. Because, like, how many people wasted $60 on Aliens Colonial Marines?
Because 1.3 million, actually.
All right. Because they misread, like, a number scale, like a 3 out of 5 or a 2 out of 5. It's like, well, it's not a 1, so maybe it's and I really like Aliens, so it's like... Number scales can misinform just as much or perhaps even more so than a lack thereof.
Yeah, I hate to, you know, complain about having the coolest job in the world writing about video games, but it's actually a rather unenviable position at times.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that is a like what you're saying, Logan. I feel like that's a bigger problem in other areas than having numbers. If like the audience, I think it's like an audience problem of like if they are basing their opinion on a number and not reading a single word. Like, that's their problem.
No, like the words are... I mean, I'm not... I don't put all this work into playing, you know, formulating my thoughts, writing and editing this because I don't want someone to read it. Like, right. In fact, screw you for not reading and looking at the score.
Yeah, like, I have no sympathy for somebody that sees, like, a review score and says, wow, this game got an 85... I will like it, but then it just doesn't jive with them, and then they complain because this game, they didn't know what this game was all about because they didn't read any reviews. Like, I don't have any sympathy for that, dude. Like,
on the other hand, that is exactly what Metacritic does. It only takes the numbers and disregards the words.
But it allows you to click into that specific game and see, like, okay, these are all the critic reviews, here are a few of the highlights, and then you can click into them and read the full review. Like, it gives me, that's how I use it a lot of times.
Yeah,
like,
here's the thing, Luke. You were in the know about how that works.
Okay. You don't think a lot of people realize that you can click on individual products on Metacritic and say, like, wow, here are what
people
are
don't visit the Metacritic site, Luke. They look at the store page on Steam or they hear about it on some other gaming website. This has a Metacritic score of such and such. So they're like, oh, okay, it must be a good game. See, I'm not a web designer, so I'm assuming that one of the cardinal rules of web design is don't do in more than one click what you can do in just one.
That's a very appropriate rule of web design.
I don't know, I guess...
So having the reviews buried is sort of inadvertently hiding them from people who don't know where to look. It's like the TARDIS. In Doctor Who, like, you don't know, you can't see it unless you know to look for it.
Maybe this is just how I am, but I end up spending, whenever I make, like, any purchase, pretty much, like, anything, like TVs or, like, anything that's a decent amount of money, I spend forever trying to research things to find out.
Yeah, I agree.
With reviews and stuff. Do most people not do that? Like,
no, I definitely do. But it's just, the thing is, again, that's talking about, like, a product, and you're games are, as Logan said, something that's never really been done before in terms of the great critiquing of art ages. Mm-hmm. So it's to get an idea of a video game, you have to read the words. Because, like I said, I could sit and tell you how Fez is a brilliant, lovely, well-made game, but deep down, I kind of disliked it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, and then you have the user. Like, if they're in mind, they want to buy Fez. They just want to see if the damn thing runs. you know, you can get by with that by seeing if the Metacritic score is fine, or, you know, just skimming to see if there's anything. It's, there's a lot of responsibility on the user end, on our end. It is a whirlpool.
Yeah.
Alice went down the rabbit hole, never once considering how in the world she was going to get out again.
I don't think us three are solving this anytime soon.
No, I don't. It is nice to have these opposing opinions, though.
No, I totally agree with you. I agree with both of you, actually.
No,
because I
see where you guys are coming from as well.
I don't know. Tale is old as time, song is old as rhyme?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think, at the end of the day, I don't think scores or Metacritic are going away anytime in the very near future.
Yeah. That was an enlightening discussion, actually.
A bit deep for a Saturday morning, huh?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I had my eggs, had my coffee.
I had no breakfast this morning. All I had was coffee. I am running on.
I was actually going to go eat before you guys tweeted at me.
Sorry. I was going to too. But anyway, I guess we can move on after that. Nick, did you have a...
Let you take your subject and save mine for a later time.
Okay, cool. So I wanted to... I was going to bring this up on the last podcast that never actually happened because I was too stupid busy. But... I think since the last time we actually podcasted, Microsoft announced that their Xbox reveal event is coming up. That's going to be in like 10 days from now.
Which both you and I will not be...
Right. We will be...
For.
We will be out. So, Logan, command the team well.
Oh, God. That's like passing the helm of the Enterprise, not to Wesley, because that's happened before, but to someone like in the background.
Right.
Like, someone doesn't even have a name.
Like, somebody on a different ship that doesn't care about that ship. Logan doesn't really care about the console game.
Yeah, that's totally true, too.
Anyway, I'm sure it'll be fine. But anyway, so there's that. And then, So, with E3 coming up in, like, a month or so, everything's going all crazy for next gen. And I wanted to take this time before we get all caught up in the next gen craze to talk about some of our favorite experiences and just favorite games that we played from this generation and also the one before. So if you guys could think of like maybe like a top three or like a top five, or even if you have that.
Okay, can we like extend it from like games to just like moments in a game? Gaming experiences in general.
I kind of wanted to focus it in on the games for the things I was gonna do here.
That's fine.
See, because I know with me when I started thinking about this, very different experience or games that I found out that were my my favorites, the one that were the most memorable games in general from this generation compared to the previous.
See, that I'm the exact opposite. There is a perennial champ for both generations, and it's the same thing.
All right, tell me your favorites. And...
Smash Brothers.
Really?
Zero hesitation. Best games of the last two generations.
Wow.
I have not had more fun playing those games than when I'm playing Smash with my friends.
Incredible.
It's a game like we don't even play anymore. I mean, who's gonna dust off a Wii in 2013? But like, man, if there was one game that could sell, which it won't for me. It would be Smash. They're such good games. Because I think they're games in like one of their many purest forms. You know,
it's
competitive. It's colorful. It has no bearing on reality. Stuff like that. I really enjoy it.
Wow, that's interesting. Because like one of the things I was gonna look at were, well, are some of your favorite experiences or your favorite games from this generation. Stuff that couldn't have been done on previous generations, but yours kind of shows that yours is more of like a evolution of what was already being done.
It's just one of those series that I've never had a bad time playing Smash, even if I'm getting my ass kicked.
Yeah, I'll agree. That's just like instant fun, instant gratification.
Yeah, and kind of in the end, that's why I personally play games. I enjoy almost every video game I've ever played, even if I don't like the game. I like playing video games.
Mm.
And, like, that's just how that's my opinion. I mean, some people, like you, are very into story, and Logan's very into gameplay and all that stuff. I'm kind of in the middle. I like games a whole bunch.
Right. And Smash is very, not dependent, but it I feel like it gets so much more fun when you have a group.
Oh, it's
playing solo.
It is one of those games that I wouldn't say is unplayable, but the disparity between fun, the amounts of fun you can have playing with or without friends, I don't think I would contemplate playing that game without a friend, to be quite honest.
I've never played that game by myself.
Yeah, it's not a game you play by yourself.
I played through the entire single player story in Brawl.
I did too, but that's just to unlock characters and stuff. I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, I have others, but I'll let you guys take the ball right now.
All right. How about you, Logan? You have a few?
Here's the thing. Like, the last time I really played a console was 2 generations ago. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to extend it to PC games that were simultaneously released on consoles of this generation.
Yeah, that's kind of what I had in mind too. Like, just whenever the PC game came out, like, I count that as part of whatever.
So, two experiences really stood out, like, that I will remember for the rest of my gaming life. And that's Fallout 3, which I've already talked about,
mm-hmm.
and Dishonored. Because, mm-hmm. like, I don't, going back to what you said, Luke, I don't think Dishonored could have been accomplished in any previous generation.
No, not especially not to the degree.
Yeah, that game is a masterpiece of modern game design, I think.
Yeah, it's very Thief-esque in its sort of general framework, but it's a lot more organic than Thief was. And obviously that's better visual design and just a whole bunch of things that you just couldn't do. Like, it took the Thief concept and put it into this generation. I guess the fourth is going to do that too. I'm sorry, it's just Thief now. I'm sorry.
The fourth.
It's just Thief now, so I'm guessing Thief is going to try that. But I think at this point, I think Dishonored is the stealth game. Like, it's taken the throne from Thief.
Right.
Like, Dishonored is the stealth game by which all other stealth games and stealth elements in games will be measured. So, like, instead of Dishonored being compared to Thief, Thief is going to be compared to Dishonored.
Mm-hmm.
The student becomes a teacher.
Right. I feel like it's kind of that way with, like, how XCOM 2, when the XCOM reboots were first coming out, like, the shooter was supposed to be, like, the big one, and the one that came out already, the strategy game, was, like, the side little brother trying to survive, and now it's completely flipped. But anyway, Logan, the stuff before that, is that pretty much in line with what your tastes were back then?
No, I think my tastes have changed at least a little bit since I started PC gaming. My cheap console experiences were Psychonauts,
mm-hmm.
and Knights of the Old Republic. Mm. I'm just gonna lump those together because it's like I feel like they're the same. They're like one big arc of experience.
Yeah, that's fine. They're very similar.
I wouldn't say they're similar per se, except for like the engine and stuff like that. But like I treat them as all one experience because it's the same sort of idea. And, like, so, like, we go from 3D platformers and RPGs to stealth games and, like, action RPGs and stuff like that. And so, it's a curious thing because, like, Psychonauts obviously still totally holds up. Like, by the way, Humble Double Fine Bundle.
Yeah.
I'll get it. It's got Psychonauts and two other games that I don't care about, but it's got Psychonauts. You can pay what you want for it.
And those games that he doesn't care about are really great. I've played... They're stacking and costume quests. They're very great. And you can get Brutal Legend if you spend enough money.
You should spend enough money.
But the fact that Psychonauts, of all things, is my fondest... I find it better than the KOTOR games. I think Psychonauts is my fondest memory of 2 generations ago. It says a lot about it because, like, it was funny. It was new. It was, like, it was a 3D platformer, but it was a different 3D platformer in an age of Jak and Daxter and Crash Bandicoot. And, like, you know, I never actually finished a Jak and Daxter game. Like, I played all three of them, but I never finished any of them.
I beat all of the Jaks. Those are some of my favorite PS2 games, actually.
Like, I had a PS2, but I don't think I ever finished any of the games I had for it. They were either too difficult for my nubile self, or, like, I just didn't enjoy them very much.
See, I am Logan, but from the exact opposite end that, like, when I was into, like, real gaming was PlayStation 1. And then I kind of took a seat for PlayStation 2 because that's kind of when I was, you know, doing the high school thing.
Yeah.
But, PlayStation 2 is man, I mean, I like all the huge names from that generation that everyone else loves a whole bunch.
It's like, I don't really remember anything from my PS. Like, obviously, it had a lot of games. Because the PS2 had the best third-party support of any console ever.
Yeah.
But so, I don't remember any games from that system that really stood out to me.
Really? That's interesting.
It was the first generation Xbox.
Yep.
And, like, I have very faint memories of a late generation PS1.
Yeah, I never had a PS1.
I had Spyro. 2 and 3, I believe. Enter the Dragon and Ripto's Rage. I had those. And the Spider-Man game. Like, it was just Spider-Man.
Ew.
Like, I remember it being so awesome, but thinking back, I don't think it was actually very good.
That's actually one of my favorite PlayStation 2 games, is Spider-Man the Movie 2.
That's supposed to be a really good game.
Dude. Actually, yes, that's the one game. That's like the bar I set for movie tie-in games.
Yeah, that game is
ridiculous. That's pretty much the only game from PS2 that I really, really liked.
Yeah, excellent.
That game. I played, at least. I mean, given that there were so many games, I'm sure there were some stellar games that I just missed out on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Lewis. But,
me. Okay, so my favorites, I was trying to narrow it down to like 3. And Journey was the obvious. Journey is my favorite game.
Yeah, I didn't even get into this generation.
Yeah. Yeah, but Journey is my obvious. And then Portal is another one that will definitely go down.
I honestly thought, I mean, I got the first one right. I should have taken the over-under, but it's like, I figured you would pick, like, Journey, Unfinished Swan, and, like, a third, like, abstract game.
Unfinished Swan was close. And then I was like, okay, Portal, and then Bioshock. But Bioshock, after I thought about it, got beat out by another one. The ones I started thinking, I liked The Walking Dead better than Bioshock. And so Walking Dead and Journey and Portal are my top 3 if I had to go 3.
Yeah, those are all respectable as hell.
And then you compare that to last generation, though. So right now we've got Journey, whatever that is. Walking Dead, pretty much like a visual novel. And Portal, which is like a first-person shooter without guns. Like a first-person puzzle game. And you go back a generation. My favorite games for PS2, Kingdom Hearts, obviously. Action RPG. And then, I don't think any of you would guess my other two.
Wait for it.
Kingdom Hearts 2 and Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories.
If we can't count other Kingdom
Metal
Hearts
Gear
games.
3? Metal Gear 3?
Metal Gear 2 was very close.
Yeah!
But
really? You like Naked Raiden?
But I loved Metal Gear 2 is my favorite Metal Gear game. I'm crazy.
Metal Gear? Sorry, I have to... Like, I have a disease when I have to do that every time someone says Metal Gear.
All right, so here's my second, outside of the Kingdom Hearts world, here's my second favorite game in that generation. Burnout 3 Takedown.
Nice.
Really?
That is my, and that game holds up so well. I love that racing game.
Because arcade racers are ageless.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And then my third one.
Unless you're Star Wars Super Bombad Racing.
My third one is kind of a tie, but I went GameCube for it. At first, I wanted to say Wind Waker, but I didn't end up beating Wind Waker until about 2 years ago, and so I don't think that counts, because if it was really a top three, I think I would have finished it back then. And so I'm kind of stuck, and so then I kind of went to Super Mario Sunshine, because I really liked Super Mario Sunshine. But I think Animal Crossing is going to win.
Nice!
Animal Crossing wins. So you got an action RPG, an arcade racer, and like a city simulation, life simulator, whatever the heck Animal Crossing is.
It's life, that's all it is.
Compared to this generation, and I don't know if that's like a change in me or a change in where like gaming is going.
Well, as you were getting that, I think your modern generation games would be nigh impossible to make on last generation's technology.
Right, because it's like episodic stuff, it's like more indie stuff. It's, like, stuff that relies heavily on, like, physics engines that couldn't have been done on that old stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Actually, looking back, I think I'm going to have to put Kingdom Hearts as my third one.
Oh,
yeah, that comes awesome, man. Yeah.
The thing is, like, I reflect on Psychonauts and KOTOR a lot, but I don't really reflect on Kingdom Hearts that much. I get these moments where, like, man, I really want to play that again, but I don't really reflect on it that much, which is why I didn't remember it before. Weird.
Hmm. But yeah, so for the next generation, when it finally comes around, are you guys more excited for the stuff that you're kind of into now? Like, are you more excited for, like, and Nick, like, for instance, like a Smash Bros, or like Logan, are you more excited for like the next Fallout that's bigger, or like are you more excited for stuff that you that are just completely different experiences?
So I kind of addressed this in my offhand tweet when I was watching the PlayStation announce. Mm-hmm. Is that, oh my god, all the games look identical, and that is terrible. That is terrible.
All the games look what? Sorry about that.
Identical. They're all like, here's a first-person shooter, here's an Infamous. Like, come on, I want something brand new.
That's
like,
why I liked The Witness the most, I think, because it seems so different. Great.
Yeah, it looks really good, but that being said, I'm a total hypocrite, because I'm looking forward to a new first-party Mario title for the Wii U, a new Smash game. I don't know, like, it's hard to predict what you'll be surprised by, but right. That's what I'm going to like the most.
Mm-hmm.
I'm obviously the Watch Dogs fanboy in residence.
Yes.
And, there was some new gameplay that came out this week.
Yeah.
You can go to your favorite news outlet of choice and find it. And, it got me really excited, like, more excited than, like, I've been looking forward to it since it was announced at E3 last year, but, like, I haven't gotten so, oh my god, I can't wait to play this game since E3 because of this new gameplay. It's like, they show us the open world, they show us the new and innovative ways they're doing with multiplayer and things like that. It's just like, it's sort of like a soup of all of my favorite game elements, like, just, like, distilled soup. I'm sorry. It's like boiled into this game. Like, it's a stealth game. It's an open world game, and I love open world games. It's got like intellectual stuff, like hacking and whatnot. It's got, you know, it's basically just got everything that I want for a game. Like, and I'm also excited that it's new IP. It's like, as much as I love Fallout, there are, hang on, 7 Fallout games.
Yeah, numerous.
Yeah,
1, 2, 3, New Vegas, Tactics, and yeah, 7.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, this late in the console cycles, it's very rare for a new IP to come along. Last of Us is kind of a surprise that's coming so late. But it seems like everybody kind of tries new things when they come to this new generation. A lot of new IPs show up, and I'm really excited for that because I've got a lot of fatigue, I think, with what's out there. I don't need another Uncharted. As much as I loved Uncharted, I don't need another Uncharted.
And here's the thing. Like, I'm just going to directly contradict my previous statements and say that the other thing I'm excited for is Grand Theft Auto 5.
People are really excited about Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yes, they are.
It's like if this game is everything they say it is, and I've seen like lots of coverage and gameplay, it looks pretty cool. If it's everything they say it is, they might have finally refined GTA into what it needs to be.
Yeah, that game is going to be massive.
How does that game run on current gen tech? It's
magic.
Unbelievable. So huge. It's giant.
Magic. But yeah, like I was saying, like, to your point earlier, Luke, that Killzone demo on the PlayStation 3 was it killed me. I died. Because it's like, here's a super, like, here's our most powerful machine yet. It can split the atom. It can do your laundry. Here's a first-person shooter. Like, that's, come on.
Right.
Your points are all perfectly valid, Nick, but, you know, the previous Killzone games were monochromatic, I guess you could say. And this demo looked at least very much lighter and more colorful and actually taking advantage of this new graphical technology, which I think was the point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about graphics anymore. I'm so tired of graphics.
I'm not saying that they had a legitimate point. All I'm saying was that was their point.
Totally right. I mean, it was largely a tech demo.
Well, I think this is a really bad place to be if you don't like graphics, because it seems like when consoles first come out, for about 6 months, maybe a year, most of those titles are pushing graphics more than anything, just to give people a reason to upgrade. So they have, when they watch a commercial on TV, they say, wow, these graphics are way better.
Yeah. See, I don't even know what I want, because I'm also getting to the point where I'm tired of indie games with unique art styles. Like, how many times do we need a child protagonist in a unique art style that's an indie game? I get it.
Or how many times do we need a game that kind of looks like it could have been made on the Super Nintendo or something?
Yeah, it's just, like,
I need new gameplay. I need it.
It's like, maybe I should turn that how-to thing into a series, like, how to make an indie game. Step one, get a big-headed child protagonist.
Step two,
find a unique art style. Step three, drop that child into the art style and make it lose its innocence somehow. Bam, you've got an indie game.
Well, you also have to have light physics-based puzzles now, too. They're very indie in vogue.
Yeah.
Like, that's how jaded I come, and I had this thought this week. I'm like, man, what do I want here?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm tired of not knowing what I get when I click on the title of an indie game.
Yeah.
Like, you look at some of these titles, and you have no idea what they're about or what the gameplay is going to be.
Which, to praise the PlayStation release thing, that game, oh god, it was like Kerplunk or Kernel or something. What's it called?
Was it that one where the PS4 guy was like this Knack guy? Knack. It was Knack.
Yeah, the game's art style was killer. And its gameplay looked kind of really cool. And it looked new. That got me really excited because
really?
It looked like really good, like almost, it's not to this level, but Pixar level of like art design where it's like if a cartoon was made of real skin. And like
that sounds actually incredibly disturbing.
Yeah, it is. And I really like that art style because they were both using the technology while not just going for straight realism, you know, like or hyper realism. Yeah, it needs to be gameplay. It needs to be something new, which is why I always will have hope for the Wii U. But I don't think it's ever going to come into fruition.
Yeah, I think the Wii U is, quite frankly, a catastrophic failure.
The Wii U is a weird place. Where's the Wii U going to be after this holiday season?
The Frostbite engine.
And there's a thing that not many people picked up on, but I heard somebody talk about it on a podcast. I don't know if you heard this, but when EA got the Star Wars engine, they said we have three, I think like three studios, I think like Visceral, DICE, and BioWare working on Star Wars games now. They will all use Frostbite.
Because that's what DICE is peddling out now, smartly. Selling an engine is very lucrative.
The side story there is that means no Star Wars games go on the Wii U.
Unless it's Legos, which...
Unless it's Legos or Disney Infinity if they throw Star Wars characters.
Yeah, I don't, like, that was a damning statement, I think. Yeah. Like I said, I have such high hope for the Wii U. Like, it is the system that I think could do stuff that I'm like, all right, that's cool. And
I mean, like, it's fortunate that Frostbite is run on relatively few games. But, now. Like... like relatively few, like when you compare it to like Unreal Engine 3.
Yeah, totally.
Like, it's an entire system of mechanics that the Wii U can't even begin to swallow.
When I heard that, I just hung my head and was like, Nintendo, please.
I don't know what they can do at this point to save it. I mean,
they'd have to re-release, and they've already re-released it. I think they'd have to re-release.
Right, and I mean, I don't want to say it because Nintendo's so good at, like, coming back from nowhere. Like, everyone said this crap about the 3DS.
They turned it around. It's doing great in 2013.
The 3DS was, like...
2 years after it came out.
Right, they were like, oh, Steel Diver, what a joke. And then now everyone freaking loves their 3DS. It's killer.
They're going to have to work some of their magic, but oh my god.
I just had this vision of like a National Treasure-esque conspiracy between Nintendo and like the United States government or something. They're like, they're trying to stimulate the economy by making people buy their old systems. Like they make systems that look so bad that it makes all of their other systems retroactively better.
So they made the Wii U bad on purpose to make the Wii look better because the Wii's sales were going down.
Yes.
The Wii sold more units than the Wii U in February.
That's so bad.
My God. I have an idea for another article now.
All right.
I think on that note, Luke, what I want in the next generation is something new and something and we are in the proper medium to get that. It just needs to be...
And something given. Borrowed and something blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess I just kind of want more of this stuff I've fallen in love with. These games that just make me feel. I love feeling, and I felt so hard for Walking Dead and Journey. And I want to feel more. I love to feel. All right. Well, I think that about wraps us up for this week, guys. What do you think?
That was a slam bang good time.
It was a good time. I'm glad we could all get together. Glad we could get together on this great weekend. Before you guys run off, know that you can go to gamers-association.com to check out every single thing we are doing. You can click that Amazon link on the sidebar and make your purchases through there. Kick us back a couple bucks and it won't charge you a cent. Be a bunch of fun. You can go on iTunes, subscribe to the Game Plan Podcast, rate us, do fun things, write a good review if you love us. We won't be here next week. I will be on vacation. Nick, I don't know if you'll be on vacation yet, but
next weekend? Oh yeah, I'm gonna be in the lovely state of Maine.
All right, cool. What's
lobster,
in Maine?
Lobster. Stephen King. All the lobster.
Logan nailed it. I'm going to come back with acne. I eat so much lobster and clarified butter.
Just rub butter on your face so you don't have to, like, for two birds, one stone. You can just rub the lobster on your lips.
I'm just going to rub the lobster on my face.
Are you going to eat with Stephen King? That's all I associate Maine with.
He's from Maine?
He writes all his books, and he writes them in Maine. They all come from Maine. He loves the hymns of Maine.
I just learned that. Thank you, Luke.
Yeah, you should find him. He's cool. He's a cool cat. But yeah, so I'll be on vacation. Nick will be on vacation. We're not gonna be able to podcast next weekend. But do you guys have anything sweet coming up that you want to pimp out?
Not really. Got finals coming up next week, so pretty much be entirely off the grid.
Yeah. That's samesies with me. I'm hopefully gonna be playing some City of Steam later today. Might write up a preview to see what state of that game's in right now. Nick, you got anything?
Not on the tip of my tongue. See, I'm torn because I want to write a Dota article, but there's only about a million.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you were talking about Dota earlier. I'm like, you haven't written a single thing about Dota.
I really want to do a Dota journal, but there's like seven already, like on really like big sites. Like RPS has one. Like Total Biscuit has one. Like, what am I gonna do?
Yes, but they are Rock Paper Shotgun, and they are Total Biscuit. People who read Rock Paper Shotgun and watch Total Biscuit are going to follow those journals. We don't have one for Gamers Association, Nick.
Yeah, see, I don't like to that end. Yeah, I want to write the definitive Dota journal.
The definitive Dota journal.
That's what it's called. That's what it's going to be titled.
You know, Nick, just write what inspires you, man.
But M4G can if I name an article the most definitive Dota journal yet.
Yeah, that's some
like there's more than one definitive Dota journal, but yours is the most so.
Mine's the most definitive. Like those are ambiguously definitive. Mine will be the most specifically definitive Dota journal.
Ambiguously definitive is my Molly Hatchet cover band.
Yeah, so maybe I'll get that. I'm working on review rundown series, which I'm actually enjoying quite a bit.
I'm loving that. I'm loving that a lot.
Is the internet.
I don't know what it takes. I think you have to have a clickbait title, like Why Real Gamers Won't Buy Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah.
Seriously, Luke, did you have any idea the can of worms you opened when you clicked post?
I thought like one dude would comment on it and say, "Okay," and that would be it.
See, like the thing is, it's one of those things, like, I know you, and I knew it was, like, satire, and I knew that not all the internet would get it, but I was shocked at the amount of people that just had no idea.
Right, and I've had, like, a couple ideas kind of like that, but I'm, like, but then I've just realized, or I've come to the conclusion that, like, these are too much of a stretch. Like, at this point, if I would write this article, it's too much of a forced thing. Like,
yeah.
That was such a that one just came to me. It was too natural. Like, I didn't do it just to be a troll. Like, just to get hits or whatever. Like, I did it because I thought, I don't know. It was.
There are seriously some Kotaku-level comments on that article.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're awesome.
I don't even read the comments anymore. I see, like, new ones come in, and I'm like, no, I'm not.
Yeah, I see them on the dash every day. Mm-hmm. But besides that, yeah, nothing on the tip of my tongue. I don't know if any of note are coming out up recently, or demos or anything for that matter. I don't know.
No, I think Fuse is coming out. They just had a demo. That
Insomniac
trying something different.
Oh, well, there's that weird game that I'm going to review on my iPhone, but I don't know the title or anything about it because I would do it. So.
Yep, cool. Yeah, so in the meantime, everybody can go back and, like I said, go back to the old episodes of this. Listen to them because we are running out of space, so we're deleting old episodes as we add new ones. So they're going to go away. So that's that. You guys, thank
send
you so
us a
much.
Question. Send us a question, guys.
Yeah, send us a question. We'll send you something fun in
that's a guarantee.
Yeah, send us a question.
Like it doesn't matter if you ask us how to pronounce gnocchi. We will give you something.
It doesn't have to be gaming related. Just be like, what's your favorite recipe for brownies? We'll do it. Well, anything, man. We just want some discussion.
We'll turn this into a cooking podcast for you.
We'll do it. You want to send recipes? We'll cook.
Like, I know exactly what my favorite recipe for brownies is, but I'm not going to tell you until somebody asks.
Right. We totally could do this. We could, they'll send us recipes. All three of us will make these brownies beforehand, and then we'll eat them and review them on...
simultaneously live.
Yes, and then we'll review them on air. Be like, all right, I really like the chocolate level. It's good. This one's too sweet. It'll be fun.
I didn't know you were a food writer because it's very convincing.
Well, I sure as hell aren't writing any reviews lately, so.
Yeah, it's like, nuts? Are you mad?
Yeah, so do that. And you can send that stuff to us on Facebook. Just comment on this post, or you can go on @GamersASSN. On Twitter, send us some questions there. You can hit me up directly @LukeAFraser, Logan @LoganHollinger, Nick @OldLeafNick. And yeah, let's just talk and have lots of fun. So guys, thank you again for joining me on this nice Saturday.
It was, as always, a pleasure.
Yeah. Best of luck with finals, Logan. I know, right.
I am a giant squid of stress and anger.
Ugh, I agree. I'm with you, man. Nick, have a great vacation.
Yep, you too, man.
We love you all, audience. See you later.
Later.
Bye.
Round two, fight.
I had to take one typing class in, sixth grade, and that's when I learned how to type, because before I was, one of those finger peckers. Just.
That's how I type still. I don't even...
My career with learning how to type is interesting because, I took the typing class in, sixth grade, and then I took what they called computer applications in, seventh grade, which is, they teach you how to use, Word and Excel and PowerPoint and stuff.
Yeah.
And there was, a typing section of that class. But see, the thing is, if I did the home row bullshit, then, I would type so freaking slow.
Right?
So wait, if I did my own technique in which I would use whichever fingers and whichever hand felt good to me, then I would type up almost 100 words a minute.
That's very fast.
And my teacher could not fathom this. She did not believe it. She all but handcuffed me to my desk to make me do the stupid home row thing. I was like, no, just let me type how I want. And now I'm a writer, so she can go screw herself.
So yeah. Wait, do you not home row right now?
Me? No. God, no.
What?
God,
no. Tell me, how do you guys type?
Dude, just loosey-goosey. Whatever happens.
Improvise, man. Whatever happens, happens. Whatever causes something to happen, man.
How different is it from, home row stuff?
Dude,
it's much faster.
But how different, how different is your style? Is it pretty much, you might just use a different finger for stuff, or,
Yeah,
I pretty much entirely use my first three fingers.
Yeah, definitely. The pinky is doesn't really do much.
Or the thumb, so it's L-O-G-A-N, that's one finger L-O, and then G-A, two fingers on my
left hand. I'm definitely looking on this, but I have the other thing where any profession or trade where you're heavily into computers, you learn, it's kind of mandatory that you have to use keyboard shortcuts a lot. So my left pinky is almost always resting on the left control button.
You're crazy.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
My mind is blown. Everybody I know is a home row kid. Maybe
one of
it's
my
this
really good friends.
Well, that's because you live in Minnesota.
One of my really good friends types with one hand. It's the and he types like not fast, but proficiently fast. It's crazy.
By the way, if you didn't know this, I'm about to drop some knowledge on your head.
Okay.
Did you know that the QWERTY keyboard is deliberately inefficient?
Deliberately inefficient? What do you mean by that?
Back when we had typewriters, certain like stenographers and secretaries and anyone else who had to type would type so fast that the levers would get tangled up with one another when they went to hit the ribbon.
Mm-hmm.
So they invented the QWERTY keyboard so that all the letters that were frequently used together were far enough apart so that it allowed the typewriter to bring the hammer up, stamp the ribbon, and come back again.
That's pretty cool. And,
so we still use it for a computer when we don't have that problem. So we are using a deliberately inefficient keyboard. Imagine if we switched to a more efficient one, we would all type so much faster.
Luke, do you ever type messages on the PlayStation thing or like use the text input here?
Very rarely. Yeah. I plug in my keyboard to it.
They have an option where it's not QWERTY, it's ABCD. It is the worst thing on the planet.
Well, ABCD is even worse. But,
ABCD sucks so hard.
It's so bad. It's
the most efficient keyboard out there, well, there's two of them. One is the Dvorak keyboard, which has the same number of rough keys as a QWERTY keyboard. Like, on the left hand, home row, it has... like most of the vowels, and on the right hand, it has like the most commonly used consonants.
Dude, that's crazy. I can't imagine like learning that at like this age.
Well, see that's the thing, because we're so used to a QWERTY keyboard that we don't want to learn anything else, even if it's holding us back.
Wait, Luke, you have an Android, right?
Yeah.
My work phone's an Android. Do you use type as text input? It's amazing.
Do I what?
Use swipe. SWYPE.
Oh no!
It's amazing.
I see everywhere. They're like, this is stuff you should do with your Android. You need to learn how to swipe. I'm like, I just don't want to learn, but I feel like I should.
Phone, it's the coolest thing on the planet. I wish I could put it on my iPhone.
And actually, speaking of typing with one hand, Nick, they actually have a keyboard that's like about the size of your average dinner plate that has all the letters arranged in a circle.
No, I see that one. Yeah, totally.
And you can like type with one hand and use your mouse in the other.
My friend just does it so he can put his left hand down his pants.
Of course.
Are you serious? Because that'd be hilarious.
But not, just like fat guy lazily.
Oh, okay. It's not like, I'm going to watch porn all the time.
No. It's really funny. Just lazily in his chair, just pecking him away with one hand.
No, awesome. My dad does the same thing. Or he used to, at least. Scarring.
Scarring. So, are you ready?
I think we're ready. Episode 8. I checked in advance this time. Or 18, sorry. Checked in advance this time. All right.
We should do something fancy for 20.
We could, yeah. Brainstorm. Brainstorm cool things that we could do.
We could have a list where we choose 20 things.
We could do that. We could have a real guest. You think we could get, like, a wicked, like, indie developer on here? Like, super, so indie that...
No.
I don't think
we might get somebody whose Kickstarter is like one third funded or something. Right. But other than that, we wouldn't get like anybody. We wouldn't get anybody that anyone would want to talk to.
Maybe we'll save that for 50.
Fair enough.
Right? Like
we've already decided we're gonna get Adam Sessler for number 50.
Okay.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
we'll be big and important by then.
If Adam's on board, I'm on board.
You gotta get the Sessler bump. Okay.
Sorry, I'll put away the chloroform.
We'll just have to go into like every one of his Google Hangouts on Wednesday and just be like, Adam, you need to do this, and just so it's like in his subconscious all the time, subliminal messaging that he's got to be on episode 50 of this podcast he's never heard of before. Cool.
People he's never heard of before.
Right.
We're probably just gonna fanboy all over him.
That's all I would do. I would just for like 2 hours and just be like, Adam, you're so great. Don't you think you're pretty great? Do you remember that time you said this great thing? It was great. All right. So, yeah, let's get started then.
Cool.